This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled weekend. Are you making plans, or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. The party continues in the Crescent City post-Super Bowl 47 as New Orleanians now set their sights on the greatest free show on Earth.
Every year there's a crazy scene way down south here in New Orleans. There's wild parties and big parades. We doing things that you can't even see. Yeah, down in the quarter and hitting Tremere. We getting ready for the Mardi Gras day. Getting ready for the Mardi Gras.
With Fat Tuesday just a few days away, many people are putting the final touches on their costumes. Meanwhile, others are still figuring out what they're going to be on Mardi Gras morning. Writer Brett Will Taylor, who produces Love Nola, offers a personal anecdote for costume anxiety, a dilemma you can only find in New Orleans.
There are three sounds you hear in New Orleans this morning. You hear heads pounding as Super Bowl fans stumble their way back to the airport, followed by voices cheering as residents bid a most joyous farewell to said fans. But listen closely, and you'll also hear hearts racing. That's the sound made by those who awoke this morning with a condition that New Orleanians fear more than the flu. Yes, I'm talking about costume anxiety. When I first moved here, I had costume anxiety. You see, I moved to New Orleans from Boston. As you can imagine, the Puritans aren't too big on glitter. On top of that, I'm a writer. Words are my thing. Boas, not so much. Before moving here, I had never worn a tutu, owned a wig, or purchased eyelash glue. That all began to change late one night in a dive bar when I signed up to roll with the Star Wars-themed crew of Chewbacca's. I told myself I'd buy a Stormtrooper costume online and be all set. Not so fast, my friends told me. We make our costumes in New Orleans. I had not a clue where to begin. I can't even cut gift wrap paper. How in the world was I going to make a costume? And then, 2 days before the parade, a miracle occurred, in the form of a bartender at Coop's. "Look, honey," she said between shots of whiskey, for her, not the patrons, "relax. In New Orleans, anything can be a costume." She set me out onto Decatur to seek inspiration. Block after block, I looked for anything. Shop after shop, I found nothing. And then a second miracle occurred. This time, it was precariously perched on the head of a bald mannequin who was missing her left arm. The miracle was a gold, three-pronged swirly-majig, about a foot tall with multicolored balls on top of each tinseled prong. That swirly-majig spoke to me. "You will be a gay space alien," it said, "and I will be your antenna." I had seen the light and my costume. Within hours, I had traded my anxiety for a can of silver spray paint and a jar of red glitter, which I used to transform my T-shirt, gym shorts, and tennis shoes into a sparkly costume. The next morning, I bought a pink wig and, holding a hot glue gun for the first time, carefully attached my swirly-majig. Hours before Chewbacca's rolled, I painted my face silver, glitterized myself from head to toe, and biked over to the parade, where I soon found myself standing in a sea of joyful aliens and space nerds. Just as we were getting ready to step off, an Ewok handed me a blue boa. "There," she said, "now you're costumed." And I was. I was the most fabulous gay space alien the world will ever see. Perhaps the only one. For WWNO, this is Brett Will Taylor.
Brett Will Taylor is a writer who lives in New Orleans. Love Nola is a partnership between WWNO and Nola V, which celebrates life and culture in New Orleans. You can learn more by visiting NolaV.com. That's NolaVie.com.
bit the soda, Northern Dash, the Coupe Chevrolet. Ah, Jiminy Crackin' the Doodaddy Giga.
Whether you let your imagination soar into the cosmos or not, if you're going to costume on that day when we throw caution to the wind, you must begin with a mask. And the 30th annual Mardi Gras Mask Market, held at the French Market Carnival Weekend, may be a good place to start. Amy Kirk, event spokeswoman and marketing director, looks back at the event's humble beginnings 3 decades ago.
Well, it's been a long journey because it started out really a very local mask market. The gentleman who started it was actually Mike Stark, who used to be a flea market vendor and manager, well known in the arts community in New Orleans. He's no longer with us, but well known in the French Quarter. I believe he also had a gallery in the Quarter. But Mike started it, and he was part of a national mask making guild. And as word spread, it grew, and now we have people who come from all over the world to display and sell their masks. Folks from British Columbia, Chicago, Seattle, Kansas, everywhere, and local mask vendors.
The masks are fashioned by master craftsmen, each with a unique story that will grab your ear as you make your way through the festive market.
Some of these masks look like the masks you would find during carnival time in Venice. And other masks look like things you would see at anything from perhaps a Renaissance fair to a street fair in San Francisco, where they sell the leather masks that are more mysterious. And then we have these gorgeous animal masks, large alligator masks, any animal you can imagine. So really, whatever your tastes are, some of them have a sense of humor, some of them are more elegant, and many of them are just pieces of art. Some people choose to purchase them and perhaps never wear them. They use them as decorations in their homes, and others just come absolutely every year to find their favorite mask vendor and see their new work. So it's an interesting, it's definitely got a gallery atmosphere in that sense. People who are looking are typically looking at them the way they would look at purchasing a piece of art. So it's wonderful like that. The good thing, too, though, lest that intimidates you, is that 2 steps away, you can get a boa and some beads at the flea market. You know, there'll be a nice entry point for everybody. It's also really fun to talk to the mask vendors about their art and craft, because they really are like gypsies in some ways. They travel around the world based on festivals and sell their masks. So they have great stories to tell, and they love coming to New Orleans.
The Mardi Gras Mask Market is the French Market's longest festival, spanning 4 days with music, food, and numerous street performances.
If you carve out a day or half a day that you can come down to the French Market, you get to wander several blocks and see not only the handmade masks, but hear bands like the Joe Crown Trio, the New Orleans Moonshiners, Kid Merv, and all that jazz. And then on Lundi Gras itself, we have brass bands all day doing second lines through the French Market. Bands like the Tornado Brass Band, Lagniappe Brass Band, and the Storyville Stompers, they're going to be performing throughout the day, and you'll be able to jump in a second line if you want with your mask.
Kirk is hoping you'll rediscover the tradition of carnival masking as you let your hair down and lose yourself in the celebration that is Mardi Gras. The 30th annual Mardi Gras Mask Market kicks off Friday and runs through Lundi Gras that Monday at the French Market between Ursuline and Barrack Streets. The Lundi Gras celebration will feature brass bands, second lines, and a host of children's activities. Events run daily from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. For more info and updates, visit FrenchMarket.org.
I'm walking down St. Charles Avenue, mask covering my face. I got all kind of feathers in places I ain't never, but oh, Mardi Gras is not a disgrace. What do I have to give up? I got to wiggle when I walk and do a second line strut just to get a Zulu coconut.
You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNF. I'm Diane Mack. Guitarist Steve Masakowski is one of New Orleans' finest instrumentalists. A creative player with virtuoso technique and a sensibility that is both modern and deeply informed by the New Orleans tradition. He's also a first-rate composer, longtime member of one of the great New Orleans bands, Astral Project, and an outstanding educator with a two-decade-plus tenure on the faculty at UNO. Steve Masakowski recently sat down with WWNO's Fred Kasten for the Talkin' Jazz interview series at the old U.S. Mint and talked about some of the ways New Orleans has shaped his life as a musician.
Steve Masakowski grew up in the late 50s and early 60s in the last house on Magazine Street.
It was very hot in New Orleans. There was no air conditioning at that time, and people were required to leave their windows open. My mother used to go outside. This is one of the things that she would do to cool a house down. She would go outside and water the screens, and we had a big window fan, and the window fan would sort of blow in, and so that was the poor man's air conditioning, you know. So anyway, as a result of having the windows open all the time, I heard a lot of stuff that was going on the street. And one of the most important things, I think, for me musically was two houses down from me was Paul Crawford's band. Paul Crawford lived there, and his jazz band would rehearse there. And when I was a little kid, I'd go outside and listen to him, and I had a little kazoo trumpet that I'd, you know, sit on my front porch and pretend that I was playing along with him and all that kind of stuff. So it's a lot of things going on at that time in New Orleans. Of course, going to parades and hearing parade music, and just, you know, New Orleans has always been a very, very musically active city. So I heard music from a lot of different angles and in lots of different ways.
Including his mother singing around the house.
She would sing a lot, you know, cleaning the house or doing work around the house. She actually, early in her career, she wasn't a professional singer, but she would go on radio talent shows sometimes. There was actually a radio program that was hosted by Johnny Vodakovich's uncle, Pinky Vodakovich, and she would go on there and sing. So, you know, my first music I ever heard was my mother singing, really.
Had she had any musical training? Or she
I don't think so. It? No, not really. But, you know, it's just people in New Orleans that would just sing and dance, you know. It seemed like everybody on her side of the family just liked to sing and dance and party and whatever.
A hand-me-down clarinet was Steve Masakowski's first instrument. He took that up in the second grade. Then the next year, started piano lessons.
You know, I never asked my mother. My father's no longer living, but I never asked my mother if she ever thought I had musical talent, because it seemed like they were very encouraging in terms of, like, trying to get private lessons and stuff like that. Like, I would take the Magazine Street bus all the way down to Worldline's Music, and my first lessons were on piano, and I used to, you know, go there for some private lessons. But I didn't really take, I don't think I took any of it really seriously, you know. And when I was around 9 years old or so, I owned a guitar. Took some guitar lessons, and I remember after about a year of guitar lessons, the teacher told my father, she says, he's wasting my time and your money. So that was about it for, you know, my music studies, you know. But I think the reason why I didn't really take to it is because I think that I was, at that time, when you studied formally with anyone, it was sort of a classical approach to learning music, and you know, I couldn't relate to, like, learning notes on the page and things like that, but I had good ears and I could pick up things, but that wasn't really the way people were taught. But coincidentally, that's usually the way jazz musicians learn how to play, by listening to the music and picking up things by ear. So I guess I was more of a jazz musician, not realizing it at that age.
Masakowski's older sister Bonnie started bringing home jazz records. He remembers hearing Getz and Gilberto and Dave Brubeck. And even though the lessons had ended, he kept on fooling around with guitar.
I didn't really take the guitar seriously until I actually got into my teens and I started playing bass guitar in a band called Truth. And we were doing, like, music based on the band Cream. And then later, when I got a little older, maybe like around 16, 17 years old, I started to outgrow that. And I felt like I wanted to learn more about composing songs, and I thought in terms of composing songs, I really need to take lessons. And now this is where I'm getting more serious into music. And I discovered a teacher that really was one of the teachers that has taught most all the great guitar players that came out of New Orleans, Mr. Hank Mackey.
Hank Mackey got Mazurkowski going in the right direction as a guitarist and on solid ground with music theory.
I wanted to learn chords, and, you know, when I started picking up the guitar and trying to, you know, I invented a specific chord, and I said, man, this is my chord. Of course, I went to Hank Mackey and said, oh, that's a major 7-6-9 chord. Everybody knows that, you know what I mean? And it's like, oh, okay. And that was that. That's when I realized, man, you know, I can't do everything on my own, you know, reinventing the wheel. So I started studying with Hank, and Hank was a real great teacher, not only in terms of stylistically, but also from a theoretical standpoint. He had a really good, clear understanding of music theory and jazz theory and how to present that to his students.
In his late teens, Steve Mazurkowski
decided to go to Berklee College of Music in Boston and got more, into theory and composition. I was actually in an arranging composition program. Berklee was great just because it threw me into a situation where, you know, there were 2,000 students, 800 were guitar players. You know, it just kind of gives you, like, for, you know, being from New Orleans and being a little bit kind of out of, in seclusion down here or whatever, you know, just kind of to this university where you're just thrown together with all these students that are kind of basically doing the same thing that you want to do. That was good, and I made a lot of connections with young musicians, you know. I think it was the first time I met David Torkanowski, was at Berklee. Mike Blair was there. Of course, Emily Remley was there. You know, so made a lot of connections with people of similar age and similar interests. And then I remember after a short period at Berklee, it was like, well, what are we going to do now? And then, you know, some of the young musicians were saying, well, let's go to New York and make it. You know, we're going to New York and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, asking me what I want to do. I want to go back to New Orleans. And, you know, it was like, I'm really glad I did that. I'm really glad I didn't stay up there and I came back to New Orleans, because I think New Orleans is one of the best places to be to grow as a young musician and just learn as a young musician. It's not the best place from a business standpoint, but through the next decade or so, I started playing with every conceivable combination of musicians, you know, and I could probably name easier the people I hadn't played with from New Orleans than the people I did play with. And I feel like there's a direct way of learning and there's an indirect way of learning, and I feel like the indirect way of playing with people on stage or, you know, just hanging with cats and learning what they're into and things like that is very, very valuable, and New Orleans kind of provides that atmosphere and an environment for young musicians to learn. And to this day, I feel the same way.
New Orleans and Steve Mazurkowski have been good for each other. He's made great music for over 30 years with his colleagues in Astro Project, created a superb body of work as a composer, including such latter-day Crescent City anthems as Burgundy and Sidewalk Strut, and continues to lead one of the nation's best jazz studies programs at the University of New Orleans. For 89.9 WWNO, I'm Fred Kasten.
Steve Mazurkowski plans a mid-February release for his new CD, Things I Like. Today's interview with him was made possible in part thanks to support from the New Orleans Jazz National Historical Park, which presents the live interview series, Talkin' Jazz with Fred Kasten, the last Friday afternoon of each month at 2 p.m. in the third floor auditorium of the old U.S. Mint. The series continues with Fred's interview of great New Orleans trumpeter and vocalist Wendell Brunius, Friday, February 22nd at 2. And we have something extra in our Lanyap Corner. Harry Connick Jr., co-founder of the crew of Orpheus, is celebrating the crew's 20th anniversary with the release today of a new CD, Smoky Mary, full of New Orleans funk and jazz music, and is named after the beloved float in the parade, which rolls on the eve of Mardi Gras, Monday, February 11th. And Bacchus Bash 2013, a day-long event that precedes the renowned Bacchus Parade, has announced its music lineup. The event, which will be hosted at the Metropolitan Nightclub and Generations Hall for the second consecutive year, will begin at noon on Sunday, February 10th, and will feature Chris Muley and the Perpetrators, J Monkey D Blues Band, Flow Tribe, and Chiwis, followed by the Super Crew Bacchus Parade. Bacchus Bash is an indoor-outdoor block party that features a band stage in the streets and a carnival party atmosphere. The outdoor portion of the block party, located just outside the Metropolitan and Generations Hall at 310 Andrew Higgin Drive, is free and open to the public. More info on ticketed events at themetropolitannightclub.com. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go inside the arts. I'm Diane Mack. Happy Mardi Gras.